Hello there, everybody. It's Jamie here from the Backball Podcast, and it's not been that much of a while. As I said last time, it was a month since the last episode before the last one. In the last episode, we interviewed someone from Insulate Britain, so definitely give that a listen if you're interested before listening to this fantastic podcast in the making. Now, we're here for episode 72, and I'm here today with Mrs. Moss, as I will refer to her, not by her first name, because Mrs. Moss is my old head teacher. Someone that I've known for quite a while, but obviously we only really got in contact earlier this year. We've done a podcast before, but for anybody that hasn't listened to that podcast, can you tell them a little bit more information about who you are?
Right, so I'm Jackie Moss, which Jamie has great difficulties with because I've got to be Mrs. Moss for him. I was the executive head teacher at Trent Vale and Beeston Rylands Junior School until the end of the summer term. Since then, I'm in a process of regenerating and reliving and doing lots of exciting things, which I'm sure Jamie's going to extract out of you. So that's who I am. So I have known Jamie really since he's been three.
It's a long time.
Very long time.
It's a long time. And obviously, you know, we spoke to you last when you were a head teacher.
Yep.
You know, you hadn't, you know, left
yeah.
at that point. And obviously, you weren't quite sure what was going to be next. But now you have left. So what is that experience been like for you so far?
Right, so this is actually, I've done 3 months, because technically my first kind of official non-working day was the 1st of September. I've become a governor at my local infant school, which is, I did do a little bit of work at about probably 5 or 6 years ago. So I've kind of joined their governing body. I go in and listen to some readers. I've done their safeguarding audit. I'm learning to bake cake for them because I think morale was a bit low at the moment. Mm. And actually, I'm going to do some of their school-led tutoring after Christmas for some of their kind of disadvantaged pupils. So that's really quite exciting. I'm on week 9, I think, of my childline training. So I do my first mentored shift on Sunday. So that's actually speaking to, you know, real life young people. That's a bit, little bit scary. Has been like going back to school. Mm. I've learned to take notes during my online learning because you get asked questions about them when you have the virtual classroom sessions. It's been really intense, very, very thought-provoking. I've had to look kind of deep within myself and really question how we did things kind of at school, because it's a very different model, and obviously it's a counselling model. It has to be a consistent model, but that's been really, really good. But it's taken up a massive amount of time. I've seen quite a lot of Ada, my granddaughter, and after Christmas, I will kind of, Thursdays are my responsible day for looking after her. Husband Tony's got her on a Friday, but we'll obviously share that between us to a certain extent. Lots of running, swimming, playing football, walking the dog. Yeah, I don't quite know how I found the time to go to work, but it is interesting. I do get up 2 hours later every morning, but I actually still go to bed at the same time, and I haven't got to the point yet that I'm not wide awake, so I'm still quite tired from it all. But yeah, but it's busy. In some ways, I'm possibly too busy, but that's a bit about me. I think perhaps having to find some structure and put a routine in. When, you know, obviously I had such a intense routine before, you know, I've been into school this afternoon just to kind of say hello. I've been to the junior school, literally had a quick cup of tea, but I bet I've spoken to people for about 10-15 minutes. I was there nearly an hour because they're just so busy running around doing all the stuff that school has to do. So yeah.
It's a big change.
Massive, massive change.
Obviously you were in that job for a long, long time, obviously, and obviously this year was your last kind of year doing it. And obviously, the education system as a whole, has that changed much during your time? From obviously, from your standpoint, how has the education system changed over those years?
I think, if I remember, you know, I go back long enough in my teaching career that there was no national curriculum when I first started teaching. So you literally could think, oh, what are we going to do this term? Mm. You know, it was as free as that, which obviously had massive disadvantages in terms of there was no progression, no continuity. If, you know, children had a good class teacher, that was absolutely great, but it wasn't necessarily followed subsequent years. I remember the national curriculum kind of coming in, and we had tick lists, I think teachers have tick lists all over the place for forever, trying to kind of assess things. But, you know, I kind of bedded down and, you know, we kind of got used to that, and I don't think anybody coming into teaching now would expect there not to be a curriculum. Obviously, that's changed with, you know, it's quite a political agenda, is education, isn't it? And politicians choose to do sometimes what they think is the right thing, and very often don't listen to the people in education about what is the right thing. So I think at the moment we've probably got to a system, particularly probably with English particularly, where there are aspects of it that's very, very narrow. Certainly primary school children spend a lot of time doing grammar. They do a test in grammar at the end of year six and they don't do it again. You kind of ask yourself why, but schools have to do it because it's part of their accountability process, and if they aren't doing the things, then obviously that's when Ofsted comes and says you're not doing the right sort of things and makes life very, very difficult for everybody. So I think education, really probably the best place to develop education is listening to educators. But it does become that political agenda. So it's changed massively, and the accountability of it just becomes more and more and more. And I know a few of the things I've kind of heard, you know, even this week, this term, you know, Ofsted's been back in schools. I'm hearing, you know, no leeway, no let up, no understanding about the COVID agenda. And yet, from contact I've had this week with schools locally, I know that COVID is impacting massively. Staff shortages, children off, that mix of online learning, just literally getting from day to day. You know, I've been back into school this afternoon, everybody's wearing masks. Fine, but that directive came out on Sunday afternoon and had to be implemented by Monday morning. So, you know, this seems to be a cranking up of kind of pressure again, and a very little understanding of what actually life is like in schools for people actually working with young children. Hopefully, most young children know nothing about this. They're back in school and it's absolutely fine and as it should be, because the best skills still work on good relationships with teachers rather than anything else. That's still that number one thing. You kind of... I remember there's a report out, it's probably about 10 years ago now, by Hattie, gone through all the different kind of types of educational research of, you know, what was the most effective. And I'm sitting there looking at it as kind of head teacher and thinking, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that's okay. You know, uniform makes no difference. Homework makes no difference. Yeah, I get all of that. And I'm thinking of me as a young teacher and thinking, but we didn't do that kind of feedback. We didn't do that because we didn't have those intervention groups. That sort of thing wasn't available. And then so far down the list was about relationships. And I thought, oh, that's how we did it. That's how you got good results out of your children, was because actually, you know, it's what you will remember. You wanted to work for them. You wanted to learn because you liked them. You wanted to do your best. They made the subject interesting. It was fun to be in the lessons. And that's how it works. So realistically, you know, in today's world, you can be an okay teacher based on relationships and nothing else. You can be an okay teacher based on good, you know, feedback, planning, all of that, assessment, all of those kind of things. The outstanding teachers are the ones who do both of those. But actually, the still key to me would be relationships. And I remember talking about that when I was interviewed for Trent Vale, 2005. And I've never stopped believing in that all the way through. Nothing came along to change me. And that's obviously why we got through COVID altogether, wasn't it, here in the Rylands? It worked really, really well because we all had really good relationships with each other.
Of course. Yeah. And I mean, you know, obviously I only recently left secondary school, obviously recently being September.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the last stage of mandatory education in that form. And obviously you do have to do something after that, which we're going to come on to shortly. And I would say my experience varied. I loved infant school. I loved primary school. I can't fault that genuinely. I don't think there was many bad times that I had there, if any. But obviously secondary school, it's a big change. But you do notice that at primary school and infant school that teachers are more focused. They do care more, and you know, they do make things more interesting for you. But as soon as you get to secondary school, it was almost like that was gone. It was out the window almost. Like, obviously you're not a kid anymore, so they can't treat you like that. But there's no interesting atmosphere to it. There's no want for, you know, some of the kids to be happy, or from my view, it didn't feel like that. And that's not every teacher. I had lots of good teachers when I was starting in secondary school. And when I finished secondary school, obviously I moved schools in year 10 and obviously had different teachers. But, you know, for a lot of time, it was just teachers that really didn't care that much. So unless you studied independently and really kind of learnt for yourself almost in some lessons, you weren't going to get anything out of it, which is wrong. And I think that education is, as you said earlier, it's kind of what the politicians want, and there's not really any or much communication with people in the education sector. And I think that they're making decisions for people just based on a few very, I would say, invalid opinions in some form. And they're not thinking about not just the people working in education, but the people that are going through it.
Well, everybody thinks they're an expert on education, don't they? Because they've all been to school.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and your model of what you think is good education is very much based on your experience of school. You know, our current politicians have a viewpoint of school that is privately funded education. It's a very different model of education, and they're a very different group of people to the general population as a whole. And they are, you know, that I can't imagine that they have any empathy whatsoever with a child who hasn't had breakfast, doesn't know where their shoes are coming from, who's going to be at home that night, and all of those pressures on those children about making an education system that's going to work for them and enable them to actually be an active member of society and have the skills that they need to make a living and, you know, give their family a good home and not the things that they're that they've experienced. Because I think ultimately, you know, all parents realistically want their children to have a better chance at life than what, you know, what they had themselves. So I think there is a, you know, a huge mismatch at the moment between what is, you know, what is good education for all compared to what is kind of being offered. And that flexibility isn't encouraged and enabled in schools. And I think it isn't that schools don't want to do it.
It's
that accountability-driven agenda that's all about based on results, isn't it, effectively? Your experience is, you will have known that that's what you're pushed to do, is you're pushed to get those results because that's what makes school looks better.
I've had comments from teachers that are like, if you don't get this result, you're out of this class and that's done. Yeah. You know, and obviously that, from my standpoint now, I go, well, I'm not going to say the word I'd use, but I would just go, well, all right then.
Yeah.
I'm still where I am now and where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't achieve the best that I wanted to. I achieved enough and I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that you should just achieve enough and just be happy. You obviously want to achieve more, but it shouldn't all be about grades. And this is where I fail to understand why mandatory education after sixth form, after secondary school actually happens. Because in my opinion, I love education. And I would love to, you know, advance further into it and maybe look at university in the future. Not definite, but maybe. But what about if I didn't want to do that? I should have that choice.
I mean, the background, I mean, obviously I would have been in your position, kind of just finishing year 11, 1979. I probably know my husband that long. So at that point, I went to school sixth form. I'd had somebody, you know, going to university was not something that was on an agenda. It wasn't something that was spoken about at home at all. There's a lad who sat with me on the back row in maths. There was Hugh, there was Kevin, there was me and Joanne. And our maths group was split into two halves because we basically took our O-level maths, as it was then, in year 10. And I was in the half that had passed it, the other half of the half that hadn't and had got to do it again. And we were talking, as you always talk in lessons, and I had literally written on my report rather a lot, did a lot of talking in lessons that I shouldn't have done. And his parents were teachers, and he was probably the only person at my school whose parents would have been to university, had a professional job. And I went to school in Nottingham. This is, you know, not a million miles away from where I've worked all of my life. And he said to me, you know, why aren't you thinking about going to university? Never, ever, it not even crossed my mind. It wasn't something that was even on my agenda. But I did. And that, for me, obviously, you know, without doing that, I wouldn't have been, you know, 35 years later, leaving a job as being, you know, 15 years as a head teacher. But at that same point in 1979, my husband, who probably has, I think he has an O-level in tech drawing and in woodwork, and maybe a CSE in something, you know, whereas I've got that raft of, there weren't A stars in those days, but there's definitely a raft of A's and B's that are my O-levels. And he had a joinery apprenticeship, 3-year joinery apprenticeship, did a 4th-year extension, and can do anything. I still, even to this day, am in awe of the practical things that he can do. We've just made something for my granddaughter for Christmas, which needed a wooden gift tag making. It's a bit of Polar Express with the jingle bell and Believe and stuff like that on it. And we talked about this, and then literally he disappeared for 45 minutes, came back, and this gift tag is just perfect. It's beveled around the edges, the hole in it is beveled around it. It's sanded to perfection, so there's nothing that she could catch herself on. And I just go, yeah, everything in our house, you know, the walls that have been knocked out, the lintels that have been put in, the plastering, the kitchen that looks immaculate, and I know the mess that's behind some of those things. You know, the electrics that have been done, you know, the roof being taken off my house and re-put on, is all down to him. And I couldn't have entered to doing that at all. And I just, it makes me very upset and angry. We remember talking when we were kids that him going through that type of City and Guilds apprenticeship, he was there, they were the last group to go through it. He's 58, the same as me. It's why we've got a massive skills problem that we've got in terms of that thing. And just ending all of that, you know, that was just such, and he learned so much through that, not just about being a joiner, but about life, you know. Bob and Brian, look, I can talk about Bob and Brian, who were the people who mentored him, who taught him, who didn't just taught him how to be a joiner, but taught him how to be a grown-up, basically mentored him as a young man into adulthood, was so influential in his life. And I think it's really sad that actually all of you, realistically, in some ways, are pigeonholed now into one way of being. I've got a couple of friends, lads in their 20s who haven't been to university, and they are as successful in their chosen lines of work as those who have gone to university. You know, thankfully mine and my friends' children are all doing really, really well as adults in their kind of, you know, 20s going forward. They're doing great. But their roots, if they've got that drive, that want to learn, that skill set, they can do it in different ways. It's about being given opportunities or taking opportunities for yourself. And certainly the sitting behind a desk learning is not for everybody. I've had to relearn how to do it to do my childline training. I had to suddenly think when I did that first online virtual classroom, realise I was being asked questions about what the module I'd done 2 days beforehand, realising I can't remember. I don't know. I've read it. I understood it. Took it on board. I've realised, you know, I had 5, 6, 7 pages of notes, but I can sit. And once I realise what I've got to do, I'm that kind of learner that can sit there and do that. But that's not everybody's style. It's not everybody's way. And it's not everybody's skill set. No offence. We don't need a whole universe, certainly not even a whole Nottingham, of people like just like me, because, you know, we'll never get anything practical done. I think for England, I actually make good cakes as well, but that's a different skill set. But, you know, it's not all about that. And I think we should value those things. Even, you know, it's the stupid different things how people think. We needed cardboard tubes at home to grow the sweet peas in. And we get through a lot more toilet rolls now I'm at home during the day. That's one thing we have noticed that's different. But we'd got long tubes inside Christmas wrapping paper. And I kind of brought them down. So, well, we've still got these two or three that you can chop up and use. In my head, the only way I could see of getting those tubes out of that wrapping paper was to completely unroll the wrapping paper, take the tube out and roll it back up again. And I watched Tony sit there, held the tube in his hand, twiddle it the other way around and pull the tube out of the centre. It was, to me, it was like watching a magician at work, because I just wouldn't have even thought of it. And actually, we should embrace that, isn't it? You know, David Beckham as a footballer is as, you know, intelligent in that physical kind of skill, you know, as Mother Teresa might well be in the kind of peace process. And, you know, Mary Berry is at baking cakes. You know, it's different people, isn't it? If we're going to praise that diversity, which we should do, because that is what makes the human race, is that diversity. And we should include that diversity, which we're fighting still so hard to do. Then actually there should be that diversity within education as well.
It's the diversity of professions, isn't it, almost? Because I would say that I came across a quote the other day, and it was literally just an interesting quote. And it's got, in fact, I'll show you here if I've got, obviously for anybody that's listening, you won't be able to see this, but it's a picture of what looks to be the Wolf of Wall Street. And it just says, you know, hard work beats talent every time.
Yeah.
And it's so true, because, you know, there's people that I've known all of my life, very good mathematicians, very good at English, very good at art, and I would go in and maybe even good at football, things like that. I was never the greatest at football to start with, but I saw there was a story of I was at Beeston Rylands Junior School, and this is something that my stepdad reminds me of a lot, and it's something that I'm very proud of something that I've done, in fact, probably the most proud thing I've done. And it's only a small thing. I was in the school football team for years. I'd never got in, I'd never even been considered. You had a load of good players in there. They're all very good players, and they're still very good now, some of them in academies and whatever else, some of them not playing football at all. But at the time, really good players, and they had a good goalkeeper who was still a good friend of mine. And he was the goalkeeper. There was no shift in him, he was fantastic. And I really wanted to be a goalkeeper. You know, I was set on it. I said, well, I enjoy playing outfield, but in school football, this is, I want to be a goalkeeper and see how I do. You know, I went to training. I trained with the people that were in the same situation as me. And then one day he'd sprained or broken his wrist. And this was probably year five. Mrs. O will remember this. And I'd got the opportunity to go and be the goalkeeper for the first team. So I thought, well, that's incredible. That's the most amazing thing ever. I'm going to do it. We went on to win a tournament, and we did lose the first tournament, but we didn't give up, and we won the second one. I think the trophy's probably still in the school from 20... I'm still very proud of that. 2016, I think it was.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it still is.
Five years on, and I remember very clearly that opportunity of working hard to get there and being given the chance to be a goalkeeper, of which I did quite well. And there was almost no looking back. I was the goalkeeper after that. And that was something that obviously filled me with great joy, you know. And in secondary school, I was again put into the B team, and I worked my way up. And this time there was no injury. It was just hard work.
Yeah.
And I got into the first team, and unfortunately it didn't end quite as well because the P teachers weren't that nice. But it was one of those things. But it's about how hard you're willing to work, the commitment you're willing to make. And this is kind of linking into why I struggle to understand why it has to be mandatory education, you know, after.
I mean, it's really fascinating, isn't it? And I've got, you know, as you know, and probably most of us, I've got, you know, two children. George is due to be 26 on Friday. Oh, my God, that sounds really, really old. And Ellie's 30 next week. Very, very different. She has always been a worker. She's precise, neat, diligent, does everything as and when she should do, just works incredibly hard and has always worked incredibly hard. Excuse me. And obviously, you know, this is virtually your level of kind of, you know, education, you know, massive group of GCSEs, goes on and gets her A levels, goes to university, gets her first, worked her backside off to get her first. So proud of her. And kind of George comes along, you know, who I do remember giving sums to in the car park in Victoria Centre while waiting to come out and seeing if he could bridge 10 of adding tens and units together when he was probably in year one. And yes, he could do it in his head. Always really bright. I remember being at secondary school one year, we must have been, I don't know, year 9, year 10, something like that, and being shown their attainment list. So in terms of attainment in the school, he was second in the school. Mm. Flip it to progress, he was second to bottom. Because at that point in his life, he was completely and utterly didn't need to work it. It wasn't going to do it. Was on a grade A GCSE maths at year 9. Came out with a grade A and was furious, actually, because his mate got an A star. And it was like, and why has he got an A star? Because he did some work and you didn't. He didn't do any work for his GCSEs until literally the Easter before you had to do them, when suddenly there was a piece of coursework that needed to be done and he didn't put a huge amount of effort in and got an A star. And suddenly thought, oh, this is easy. So ends up with the same kind of GCSE results as what Ellie's got, but nothing about the same effort. And he always says to me, you know, why did Ellie get a laptop for doing her GCSEs and I didn't get anything? It's because you didn't put any effort in. And actually she had the laptop beforehand because she was working so hard, she just needed it. And, you know, he did work. He was always adamant. When she did her A-levels, his kind of comment was, with that tense morning, you've not faced this one yet, that tense morning as to whether you've got your A-level results to get you into your uni of choice, which rank as one of the most stressful mornings of my life, I think. His comment was, well, I'm not going for a red brick university if that's the stress and hassle that it causes. Actually, he did, because he got to sixth form and suddenly decided, for whatever reasons, it was competition with the lad, actually, who got the A star in maths, and he didn't want to be beaten, ultimately, by Patrick in maths. He worked his backside off during A-levels and worked really hard. So got a bursary for Leeds because he'd got an A-star in maths. And I was over the moon to discover that they actually gave it to him each year as long as he continued to work at 2-1. So he didn't get it all in a lump sum. They gave it and he had to maintain A-level to actually continue to do that. And, you know, he did a four-year course with a placement in the middle, got an MA, and has got a first. But he's naturally so much brighter. He's having to work hard. Now he's got a proper job, because he has now got a proper job. He's suddenly realising that he has got to work. And he does work. He has got that work ethic. But in terms of which one of them has, you know, they're just so different. They look on paper as though they're equally, you know, equally that same kind of intelligence is the wrong word, but same level of achievements, yeah. But actually, and Ellie would say this to him, you know, George, just think, you know, actually, if you did work hard, what your potential would be. You know, because she probably achieves at her potential day in, day out. And it's phenomenal what she achieves, but she works at it and achieves it every day. And his journey to that point is very, very different. So I think, yes, it is about the effort that you put in.
It's all to do with motivation, I find, because I'll admit I didn't put in as much effort as I would have liked to into my GCSEs, and I think I'm still getting adjusted to A-level life, and I don't think I'm putting in the effort, but I'm not putting in the 100%.
It's massive, isn't it?
But I know that it will take time, and I know that I will be ready to put that effort in. I've set out the time to do it. But it's kind of, you mentioned earlier about opportunities and stuff, and I think as well as being given opportunities, I think it's important also that you can maybe attempt to create your own form of opportunity, because I think school should give you time to do things outside of school to better yourself. So I would propose this, and this might not work. Homework, it's optional, like it is in sixth form. You don't have to do homework. I've missed out on homework before, and the teacher said, well, why haven't you done it? I said, well, you told us it was optional. Obviously, I did go back and do it. That's not a problem, but it is optional. And I think that's a good idea, because instead of you saying, well, you have to do homework, you could say, well, you could do homework, or you could try and work on a new project and we'll give you an idea. Work on something, see how it works. Obviously, not something that is a major financial, you know, contribution, but something just small, you know, something like, I don't know, go home and cook your favourite meal this week. And, you know, there's practical kind of skills, the life skills almost, that I think you should go home and practice and spend your free time doing. also giving people the opportunity to have those hobbies, because I know that if it wasn't for COVID, we wouldn't be sitting here now. I know if it wasn't for COVID, I wouldn't be doing football commentary. And if it was for COVID, I wouldn't be doing any of the things that I'm doing. I'd be in my room, probably studying and just playing games all day. Yeah. And I don't enjoy that. I've got to keep myself busy.
And this is actually even bigger than education, isn't it? Because this is a bit bigger about what life is about. And actually, perhaps when you asked me about how has education changed, and I don't think this is just about education, this is about every single job, it's become about people needing to work at their capacity 95% of the time. And you can't do that. Mm. You can't do that and not completely and utterly burn out. You know, I'm not sleeping 2 extra hours a day for no reason, is it? That is because that's too many years of not actually having enough sleep. And I don't quite know when that's actually, or if that's ever going to kind of stop. And it's like every profession, you know, and I look at, you know, Ellie and George do very, very different things that I don't, you know, one does email and one does corrugated processing things. I don't totally understand what they do, but I know they work hard and I know they're really pushed to like get every ounce out of them. And I've got, you know, friends who work for the university, people who work hospices and nurses, but everywhere it's like, let's get every last drop out of them. And that doesn't allow then that creativity and opportunity. And in some ways schools have become that same thing, is pile more on you because of the accountability agenda, because the more of those, you know, whatever grades it is that they need, that's what's kind of seen, that there isn't those opportunities. But it, and you're very right, is how to make that universal, that doesn't have a financial implication, because actually is that cultural capital, isn't it, that those opportunities, particularly for those disadvantaged children who, you know, have not been on a bus, on a tram, are not going to go skiing on holiday, not been to a museum, an art gallery, all of the, because how do you know that you like something or you don't like it until you've actually done it, and done it multiple times in some ways, you know? Is there a classic phrase around our dinner table that you have to try new food 17 times before you know if you like it? Ada's been a little bit iffy about fish, but she's only on number 6, so nobody's giving up on her yet. You know, so, but it's the same for other things, isn't it? How do you know that you really like them? You know, we were talking downstairs earlier, you were laughing at me, and I said to you, I've been playing football. Mm. And I've been playing football for about the last year, having never played. And my eyesight is possibly the worst possible eyesight that you could come across. If you couldn't wear contact lenses, I would be classed as partially blind. So the whole depth perspective, hand-eye coordination, I have never done any sport that involves any hand-eye coordination. So that's why I run and swim, because it just involves me and my body and I don't have to be involved with anybody else. Mm. But learning to play football was something I wanted to do, having never ever played, never had a ball at my feet, just in there. So I played for the last year, very, 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 very bad is where I've started, and I'm probably still very, 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 very bad -1. You know, it's not quite as bad as it was, but I've been encouraged by a lovely group of women that I kind of played with on a Thursday night, who've, you know, been very inclusive and encouraged me. And I actually do some training a group that's kind of set up for kids, but actually do adult sessions as well. I have a lovely guy called Sol, who kind of is very, very patient with me. That's all I can say. He's very, very patient with me. Yeah, most of the time. But it's that practice, isn't it? It's that doing something. It's that opportunity. You know, I was not given that opportunity when I was younger. And I've had some weeks I've had to really fight with my inner demons, in a way, to go to something that I don't feel comfortable with. Because that's hard. It's hard to do something new and meet a new group of people when it's not something you feel comfortable. So it's how school and growing up for young people can give them as many opportunities and tasters and different sports, you know, different being outside, different walking, looking at nature. We've learned so much. You know, COVID taught us one thing: being outside is the best place to be. You know, it's a bit like you're saying, you know, you've done podcasts and this, that and the other, but we've also learned about the value of being outside. But yeah, how we can give those opportunities. You know, it's the first thing we did at kind of at school in the summer when all the children were back after the second lockdown, wasn't about more English and maths tuition, but was actually, let's have circus skills, let's do Zumba, let's get such and such in, let's go, who else can we get in to come and do something different, because none of us have had that chance. And when you're six and you haven't had that chance for nearly 2 years, that's a third of your life that's just...
It's gone.
It's not going to come back, yeah.
It's hard to step out of that education perspective, though, during COVID, because obviously during COVID, there was, I would say, a large majority of time where we were told, your exams aren't going to be cancelled, you're going to be sitting them, no matter what. Mm. And obviously for me, that was quite scary, and obviously for me and millions of other people, or maybe hundreds of thousands of other kids across the UK, that's a scary thing to say when you say, we don't know the future, but no matter what the future is, no matter how much it disrupts you, you're going to do it.
Yeah.
So at that point, I felt disadvantaged. Mm. I knew that actually I haven't worked hard enough. So I'll admit it. I think COVID saved me. I think I think that maybe without COVID, I might not be in the sixth form and maybe would have got the kick up the arse, if you like, that I needed. Mm. Thankfully, I've learnt that now. Mm. And I now know, and I didn't learn the hard way. But I do think it all reverts back to the idea of just having your own time to do things, and because every kid should have the opportunity to be creative, and every person should have the opportunity, because I know there's people that I speak to all the time that are like, I've always wanted to set up a little clothing business, or I've always wanted to learn how to do music, or I've always wanted to, you know, to learn, I don't know, how to make a printer. I don't know, you know, just random things. And you think to yourself, well, they've not had the opportunity to do that because someone's gone down and told them, you've got to revise for... My school is telling me that they want us to revise for 30 hours a week to achieve what they want us to achieve. And I said, well, no, I will achieve what I want to achieve. It's not about what you want, or I'm here because I want to better myself, not to better you or your salaries.
But it is actually that time, isn't it? I've talked to you at the beginning of this about the things I've been doing, you know, since I've kind of not been working. But you can very clearly see from that I've certainly not been sat on my backside doing nothing. I did aim to read a little bit more, and I am reading. If you've not read Hamnet, read it. It's absolutely amazing. I've still got the last 10% to go. But, you know, I have been, and I still not watch huge amounts of TV. Mm. But that time, it has been that opportunity just to do, you know, like, I've read the stuff for governors' meetings. I mean, I've been years producing stuff. I'm not saying I always read it properly, but I've read stuff properly and tried to do a good job at other things, learnt kind of different skills. And I still don't feel as though I've got enough time. I still don't feel as though there's enough time in the day and enough hours in the day to do all the things that I kind of really want to do. But it's like, but this is a whole kind of, you know, we really change. And I suppose this was the hope, wasn't it, in some ways at the start of COVID, that we might look a little bit more deeply and thoughtfully about what we really wanted for life and what we really value. And sadly, we haven't. We've just reverted straight back. I'm finding this Christmas incredibly, incredibly difficult. I get it from an economic point of view, that the shops are absolutely desperate that we spend oodles and oodles of money because they need to. They, you know, they want to keep their businesses running. So I totally get it. But it's that, you know, that greed, that waste. You know, I was looking. I must have walked through, you know, Victoria Centre the other day, and, you know, it's the gift sets and the packaging, and, you know, before I even look at what's in them, which I know full well nobody really wants, you know, it's like we had that chance to relook at what was really important. You know, we've had the whole, you know, COP26 and looking at climate change, and yet we're still buying loads of plastic, you know. You know, for Christmas, you know, I found recycled gift bags the other day, as long as you cut the ribbon out of them and didn't put the ribbon in the bin. Yes. You know, and education is its purpose is to enable, isn't it really, to enable young people to become valuable citizens. That's realistically what that purpose of it is about, to enable you to enter adulthood with the skills and knowledge that you need to become successful adults. Not that learning ever ends. No. I mean, I think that's a given, realistically. But while we've still got a kind of economically driven, selfish, greed driven, accountability driven world that's all based on profits. Schools' profits end up being their exam results. So it all kind of filters down. And in some ways, you kind of got to change the whole values of society and what we view is really important. You know, we've had all that bit with all, you know, the horrors, realistically, obviously, that the health service workers have been through. But I actually, you know, really felt through the whole thing. So there's poor people working at Sainsbury's and Tesco's. Nobody was really kind of giving anything to her on minimum wage, and yet we're facing people walking in and out all day, every day, and we're great at risk. But you people in care homes, people, you know, people in schools who it just seemed to become given that, you know, they just ramp it up again each day to make it safe and keep it going for kids with no kind of thought for them at all. And it's like we just really need to look at what we actually want as a, you know, kind of society ourselves and what our values are, and then the education system in some ways will flow from that. But while there's that dichotomy, that argument, and politics is central and core to it, then education is never going to be around what educators think it should be around.
It's just unfortunate because I agree, because I think that There was more delegates for fossil fuel companies than there were for the international community in the various countries, which I think says a lot. And there's a famous quote, and I can't quite say who it's by, but it goes something in the form of, when the last animal roams the earth, the last drop of water is gone and the last tree is chopped down, we will remember that, we'll realise that you can't eat money.
Yeah.
You know, and... Yeah. I think if money is your only motivation in life, then actually I don't think you will succeed. And I think, you know, you might actually succeed financially. You may do very well, but you won't succeed in terms of your happiness. You know, you will lose people along the way, and people that you once knew, we will forget about.
It's interesting. We've talked about all the things that I've kind of been doing, and in some ways, and this is probably one of my most proudest ones at the moment, I joined a running group, must have been at some point either just around lockdown or when we could start running again, whenever it was in January, February time. I might have been probably in March or April virtually by the time we could do it, which is a wellbeing running group. There is quite a few of them around. There's one on the embankment. It's called Run Talk Run. And it's been great. The aim is that you do a 5K run, but you have to run at the speed of the slowest person and you talk and chat along the way. And it very much is that. And our lovely leader, Damien, has kind of decided that this half term, kind of from October half term, we'd do a couch to 5K and we'd train people. And we've had up to 30 people kind of come into this group. It's been great. All people of all different ages. Some have run before, wanted to redo it. Some have never run in their kind of lives. And the teacher in me went, I'll go at the back. It's all right, I'll go at the back. And so basically I have one-to-one with my lovely little protege who is so determined. You know, the main group, are up to running 25 minutes. She did 13 and a half minutes last night, and we gave her a round of applause because it was a massive achievement for her. She's been coming out all weather, she's been doing it. And I'm really proud of kind of coaching that person along that route. It's something different. It's you know... No, you know, I've got so much from her, listening to her and her life and what she's been doing. And I know she's got oodles from me because she can't believe I've given up my time. I have to work out my Tuesday running group to be completely different. So I actually get a running because I don't actually run when I'm with her. And I've had to change the whole couch to 5K agenda because she can't go at that speed. So I'm working out each week what little bit I can push her at to do. But it's that giving to people, isn't it, that means so much more to you than the money. And I know, you know, I'm in, you know, those people out there can say, I am in a very fortunate position with probably a very good public sector pension. Still can't believe they're going to pay me for doing nothing until the day I die, basically, which I've decided is going to be as long as I worked for, at least. So, but... You know, it isn't the money that's the agenda for us. And I think you're right that if that's your only agenda, you end up feeling very hollow and very sad. And that isn't that money isn't important and we have to pay the bills and we have to keep ourselves going. You know, I know a young person who struggles in some work to kind of stay in work, and in some ways isn't helped because she has got somewhere to live and her gym membership is already paid and she still sees her friend, and work hasn't become her importance. She doesn't see that necessity, because there is that necessity to work to pay everything, but it isn't everything. There is a, you know, a conversation we were having, my husband said to me, Tony said to me, he said, what I learnt through COVID is how little money we actually need to be happy.
It's true. It really is true, because, I mean, to be fair, I money is, you know, obviously I've tried to make as much as I can during, not COVID, but just during the time that I've had off. So when I've had time off school, I've been gardening throughout the summer, well, throughout the time that we had off, which was 14 weeks, the second week after it, I was straight out gardening. I bought myself a carriage for the back of my bike, I took my lawnmower in it, and I just cycle everywhere.
Yeah.
I'd cycle to Chilwell, I'd cycle up massive hills, I'd cycle anywhere, you know, and I'd go and do these big gardens, and I wouldn't earn a lot, but then all of a sudden it started getting better, word of mouth spread, and it did really well. And, you know, I was at a point where I was earning, I don't know, 5 to 10 times the amount I'm earning weekly now.
Yeah.
And I just looked back and went, God, I really love that.
Yeah.
You know, but I did have that balance. You know, I still did my news work. I still did this. And I still spoke to family. And I still sat with my mum every night and had food. And I still had time to see people.
Yeah.
And I was very happy. But as soon as I got back into school, it was almost like, well, I got no time for any of that now. Yeah. And it's that unfortunate position it puts you in. For people with weaker mental health as well, I think it's a complete...
Well, I just, you know, I kind of think, you know, I've been, you know, I'm 58, I've worked for, you know, done uni and straight through into school, so basically worked, has been teaching for, what, 36 years. And this is the first time I've had to be able to do those kind of, you know, those things that I've wanted to do. And yes, there has been the school holidays, but for a lot of those times, you know, when my children were growing up, and it's really interesting because they have a lovely perspective on the school holidays. So, oh, it's great, Mum. So we always had you around, and you know, we did this and we did that and the other. Whereas mine used to be, oh my God, it's the week before half term. What are we going to do next week? You know, because I suddenly have to start thinking about something different. And that, but that is very special. I was very lucky to have that. But yeah, we don't factor in anywhere near enough free time for people to keep those connections, those having dinner, those, you know, your gardening work, because you were outside, weren't you? So, you know, the impact for you on your physical and mental health of that, of doing all of that, would be massive. And we, you know, it's like this expectation that you can squeeze every last drop out of each person means that they're not able to recover because they haven't got enough time to do the things that aid your recovery, which is, you know, exercising, you know, eating healthily, seeing your friends, making connections. I was canoeing the other week with some friends. We tend to go once a year. We've been canoeing with these for years. We've got a Canadian canoe. We're out on the River Soar. And my friend behind me, because you're obviously sat in a row when you're on a canoe, aren't you? And she's been reading some Japanese stuff, and she kind of said this Japanese health stuff was about we die from the feet upwards. Wow, yeah, actually, because the minute you stop moving, but what have we created? We've created such a sedentary lifestyle, and if we don't give people the opportunity to move, what are we doing to them? You know, it's so in some ways, we, you know, as employers, you know, and if I put myself in that role, you know, because ultimately I was an employer, but actually, you know, 80% of people's capacity would be a good kind of balance, which would then allow that 20% for when you needed to rank up the pressure, because you could then pull it back, but also would then, if they're not working to absolute exhaustion level, then gives them chance to see family, see friends, engage in hobbies, whatever those hobbies are, you know, learn to play the musical instrument, take up your sewing, whatever it is that does it for you. And that actually has to be the same for young people as well. You know, you can't be doing school work all day, every day.
No, I find it, and the last thing I'm going to kind of say on this is that when we were told how much time they wanted to revise, I was straight away like, I'll put in effort. I enjoy school, but there is no way that you are getting 30 hours of me at every week. And they said, well, you're not going to achieve the top then. And I said, well, if that is how it is, then I'm willing to do that, because it's like, well, you've got people in your class that are going to achieve this, this and this because they're putting in this much work. And I said, well, let them do that. I'm happy how I am. If I'm not doing well, of course, then we'll have to have that chat and that's fine. But until then, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to keep, I'm happy. I'm doing as much work as, you know, the majority are. And I'm not putting in 30 hours a week just so that you can get a higher thing on your little sheet. So no, I'll do what I think is right with your advice and I'll take it on board and I'll make out what's right for me. And then that is it. Because that's all it's about. It's about me in this situation. Yeah, so, and it's not about them. You know, you're just there to teach me. You get paid, you go home, and that's it. You just repeat the cycle. I'm not even at that stage yet. You've done that. So, you know, I highly doubt that they did 30 hours in college. You know what I mean?
I can't imagine revising for 30 hours.
No, because I said, well, there's a lot of things that I don't even work 30 hours.
Yeah, well, I've done the work in 60 hours, and I know that how detrimental it is to your health. And I know that actually that's when you stop functioning. There is a very definite point, probably between, and I would say as head teachers, and probably most of them around here would completely agree, you can do 50 to 55 hours, and that's what a general week would be. It tips much over that, and actually everything you do takes you twice as long, and you've usually made that many mistakes in it. You may as well not have bothered. There is, yeah. And that's a ridiculous amount of work, absolutely ridiculous amount of work, and too many people are being asked to do those amount of hours per week.
Yeah, and you know, the kind of send-off message, if you like, that I'm going to say is that if you are in a position where you don't feel happy and your only motivation for doing that is money, there is definitely better ways to have the same amount of money but be happy. You know what I mean? It goes back to that quote, you know, if you're willing to work hard enough, talent doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it is. You know, there's people that are very talented, that are very good in what they do, but there's people that are beating them because they're working hard.
Yeah.
You know, and working hard doesn't necessarily mean 30 hours. It means a week. It means working efficiently. It means working smartly. It just means giving yourself time so that you don't burn out.
Yeah,
you know?
But, and you're absolutely right there. That working hard is about working hard and looking after yourself as well. It's the balance. You've got to work hard at work, but actually you've got to work hard at looking after yourself. Because without that, you know, at the end of the day, the people who remember us are our families and friends. The work stuff you can just walk away from and they don't really remember who you are. You're just gone. But, you know, it's also about you, isn't it? It's about you thinking, well, actually, have I achieved? What am I doing? And, you know, to walk away at the end of your life and think, well, all I did was went to work every day. Unless it's, you know, going to work every day was the best thing in the world. And I'm not saying I didn't enjoy what I did, because I did enjoy being a head teacher. And it was never, ever boring, which is the best bit about the job. Because I hate being bored. But ultimately, I know, you know, Ellie and George and Tony and Ada will never know me as a head teacher, and they're the ones who are kind of around, isn't it? To them, it's the most important.
Yes, yeah, it's. I just do what is best for you and what you feel is best. You know, you don't always have to go with your gut instinct, but I would if my gut tells me to do something. More than likely we'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, there's been instances today where I've said, well, I'm going to do that now. Yeah, I'll do it. I feel motivated. I feel good to come here. I feel ready. I've got work at 5, but I'm still feeling motivated to go to work. You know, even though the pot washer's broken and I'm going to have to do everything out of a sink manually. That's all right. I feel motivated to do it.
Whereas I'm going to play football, so it's all right, you see.
Well, that's it. I mean, I've got football on Saturday. No, so
it's all right.
But thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. It's been a really, really good episode. Hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah.
Almost the booster of podcasts. This is just the second dose, if you like.
Get my booster tomorrow, actually. Triple jab tomorrow.
Well, there you go. Exactly. And I will also say, if anybody, you know, is looking at getting their booster, I'll maybe include a link in the description. But do get your booster if you want to get it. I don't think anybody's going to force you. I don't think you should be forced to get it. But if you do want to get it, I encourage you to get it. And I'll be getting my second dose also in good time. So thank you all for listening. Episode 72 there with Mrs. Moss. And thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jamie. Really enjoy that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day, evening, morning. And thank you. Did you enjoy that episode of the Batball Podcast? Well, if so, share, follow, like, do what you need to do. We would really, really appreciate it. Do tune into the next episode. If you're listening on Thursday, the next episode's on Sunday. And if you're listening on Sunday, the next episode's on Thursday. But any day that you are listening, take a listen to all of our more than 50 episodes available, and do share them and let us know what you think. Thank you for listening.